But we had a bit of a timing issue a little early on, and it's just continued the domino effect, as Wen calls it. Is recording on? Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much. Right, well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to this ALAC policy discussion part one, which was supposed to start about half an hour ago. It's 11:35 here local time. With us, we have Brian Peck, policy director, who is going to speak to us about the RC and IOC issues. And I think I should just... There are no issues, of course, but he's just going to speak to us about this imaginary thing. Anyway, Brian, welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Olivier. Good morning, everyone, and for those participating remotely. I'm going to give an abbreviated version of the slide presentation, basically providing a current status or update of where we are right now. And yes, I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to give an abbreviated version of the slide presentation, mainly focusing on the current status of the issue and a brief overview of the preliminary issue report, which was published earlier this month. And I'd like to leave some time left open for questions that you may have. And so if we could maybe move to, I believe it's the third or fourth slide. Current status. Thanks, Matt. So where we are right now, as you may know, that the ICANN board last year in Singapore adopted a motion which placed a moratorium or temporary moratorium on the registration of International Olympic Committee and Red Cross names in terms of applying for registration at the top level of new GTLDs. Since that time, the GAC had submitted a formal proposal to extend permanent protection for these names both at the top level and the second level. In response to that, the GNSO Council formed a drafting team last year that came up with some recommendations to implement permanent protection at least at the top level. Those recommendations were adopted by the GNSO Council earlier this year and submitted to the board for adoption. The board's new GTLD committee declined to accept those recommendations, basically due to timing concerns at that time at the late stage of the application process. Currently where we are right now is that that temporary moratorium on the top level, of course, has expired with the end of the application process for the first round of new GTLDs. There are no protections at the second level for names for the IOC or Red Cross. The GNSO Council called for an issues report on whether protection should be granted for the IOC, the Red Cross, international government organizations, IGOs, and other international organizations. That preliminary issue report was published on June 4th of this year and is open for public comment. And the drafting team from the GNSO is still working on coming up with recommendations or proposals for protections of the IOC and Red Cross names at the second level. Okay. Next slide. Matt, next slide. Sorry. As I mentioned, the preliminary issue report was published on June 4th. The reply period opened up today, as a matter of fact. There were some public comments submitted by the deadline yesterday. The reply period is open until the 16th of June, 2359 UTC. The scope of the preliminary issue report, as I mentioned, is not just the IOC and Red Cross names, but also IGOs and other international organizations. And the scope is to whether protection should be granted at both the top level of new GTLDs and or at the second level of new GTLDs. Okay, next slide. The report looks at current protections that are available both at the top level and second level. Those are listed on the slide right there. Next slide. Issues that have been identified that if a PDP is to be issued or initiated by the GNSO Council based on the final report, would be including such issues as quantifying and qualifying the type of organizations that could be eligible for such protections, the scope of the protections that are currently available for both the IOC and Red Cross as well as other IGOs, delineating the differences between the Red Cross and the IOC compared to other international organizations, and establishing an objective set of criteria so that instead of getting case-by-case requests by other international organizations of having, as I say, a set of criteria that could then be used by one organization to see if they could qualify for such protection, and two, for ICANN to be able to determine whether such organization could qualify for such protection. Next slide, Ryan. Okay. The basic staff recommendation for this preliminary issue report is that the GNSO Council should consider whether or not to initiate a PTP as an approach for developing any further policy advice on this issue. The other is to, if a PTP is to be initiated, on determining whether to limit the scope of types of international organizations that qualify for such protection, and also to take into account, if a PTP were to be initiated, the amount of resources, additional resources, and workload that may be available, given the time constraints with the planned designation of new TTLD strings sometime early next year, especially if it would be deemed appropriate to recommend protections at the second level. So that's where we currently are. And we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have about the issue report or the broader issue of the IOC Red Cross names. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. So now we have the floor open for questions. And first in the queue is Alan Greenberg.
Brian, thank you. Two comments or question. One comment, one question. Usually there's a staff advice whether the GNSO should initiate a PDP or not. This time the staff advice was the GNSO should decide whether to do it or not, which is a rather no-brainer conclusion as far as I'm concerned. The GNSO obviously has to do that. So you are not issuing any advice as it stands right now as to whether this is something which is should a PDP should ensue or not. I'm just noting that.
Sure.
The second, more substantive, I admit I've only read the paper, the preliminary issue report, quickly. But one issue did not hit home as being emphasized, which I think should have, and it may be buried there and I missed it. And that is, most of these organizations currently have no protection. That is, both the URS, the planned URS, should it ever come to be, and the UDRP both focus very explicitly on trademarks. And most IGOs, I suspect, have not attempted to trademark their initials or their name throughout the world. And therefore, to use Red Cross as an example, which I don't think should have been the focus of this issue report, but nevertheless was heavily in it, does use the UDRP because the American Red Cross happens to have trademarked the name, but it's not protected under those mechanisms by nature of the other qualifications, mm-hmm. And there was, as the paper does note, there was an effort several years ago, 2007, I think, 8, from the IGOs to ask for protection, and there was course protection complementary to the UDRP, but for them who don't have such protection, and often from organizations that are don't have the ability to file lawsuits as in the normal sense, and the GNSO decided not to follow that one up. So they're basically still left with nothing there, mm-hmm. And I think the issue report should have highlighted that because it really is crucial.
Thank you very much, Alan. And you know, as I'm sure most of you know already, Alan has diligently served on both, on the drafting team that has worked on the recommendations for the IOC and Red Cross, and is very familiar with this issue. So we appreciate your comments on that. And you know, this being a preliminary issue report, we can certainly address those before the final. If I could just respond to a couple of points you made. As you noted, it is a little bit of a different recommendation, if you will, in terms of the PDP. The background behind that is that you actually have several outstanding kind of elements, if you will, leading up to the issue of the report. You have the original the original board request from its motion last year in Singapore when it placed the temporary moratorium that it was awaiting further policy advice on this issue from the GNSO. You also have a request from the board that was issued on March 11th of this year asking for policy advice from the GNSO Council on whether to extend protections to IGOs. In response to that, the GNSO Council wrote a letter back to the board saying it felt it was appropriate this time for IGOs to work with the GAC first. If the GAC were to develop any policy advice and submit to the board, the GNSO would then consider acting upon that. And so with that kind of sensitivity of, you know, that the board specifically mentioned that it was not going to take any action this time, we felt it wasn't staff's position to say, well, you should issue, you should recommend a PDP. It's more, should you decide, you should decide whether to utilize a PDP as an approach for developing policy advice. So it's a little bit, and it's a little bit nuanced, but that was kind of the sensitivity behind that particular recommendation. In terms of the issue, as you mentioned, because of the lack of a trademark for several IGOs in particular, it makes that not available then for them to use some of the new or existing mechanisms. That is something that we'll try to, it is kind of buried in the report right now in the question of whether existing protections are adequate enough, but we can certainly highlight that more in the final report.
I'll point out that there is actually a third initiative going on parallel, and that is the board has asked the GNSO should there be better protections, period, for That's trademarks, right. presumably, at the second level, and that's yet another all-encompassing one.
And that's correct. And in response to that, there was a board motion in April asking for staff to provide a briefing paper on, the perceived need for defensive registrations in response to that question of, indeed, whether the current protections provided for trademarks is adequate or not. So that, as Alan has pointed out, that's kind of a third element that is being kind of wrapped into or at least is related to this issue.
Thank you. We have a queue in operation. Currently in the queue, we have Yaovi, Bo, and Salanieta. So Yaovi Atohun first.
Yaovi speaking. My understanding is that the result of this work will help the new GTLD evaluation panel. So you are in the process now. I want to know if you think that the result, or before you conclude the process, we can have something that the panel will use, if I understand correctly.
I'm not quite sure if I understand. I mean, that there, as you say, there's an evaluation panel which has a set of criteria under which, they will evaluate the current strings that have been applied for and have been revealed. In terms of the IOC and Red Cross names, again, under the board motion adopted in Singapore, there was a complete moratorium on the application or use of their related names for top levels of the first round of application. So that's been completed. There are no, beyond what is already provided in the applicant guidebook in terms of guidance for evaluation of other strings for IGOs, those are already established.
Thank you. And next is, and I didn't see Jean-Jacques' hand in the conference room, in the Adobe room, so I hope, Bo, you don't mind if Jean-Jacques jumps ahead of you? Jean-Jacques Subrena.
Thank you. Sorry, Bo. This is Jean-Jacques Subrena speaking. I have a general remark. I attended part of the end of the GAC meeting, and there were people from the IOC, Red Cross, etc., speaking in a very forceful way, actually. And I found that some of their arguments really had merit. Is it really up to them, meaning up to your taxpayer money and my taxpayer money, to be used with engaging British or American lawyers just to make sure that a public body like the IOC will not get it wrong or be abused? So this brings me to the notion of default settings. And in various areas of ICANN work, I have noticed that there is a tendency, a propension to adopt default settings which are perhaps more favorable to the domain name business than to end users. I wondered whether you would care to perhaps bring this comment up to David Olive, Akram Atala, and Fadi Shahade, because maybe this is the time when there should be a crucial look again at some of the default settings within ICANN. not only in the business you're covering of policy, but in many other areas as well. And certainly in this business, I'm a former government official, a former ambassador of France, and I can see that this comment or this objection by the states assembled in the GAC and also the international organizations will not just evaporate. You have to address it. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that try to have a hard look at the default settings which would allow more entitlement, as it were, to states and organizations to have their right without having to prove their right with lawyers who are paid for that and generally very expensive. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Duly noted. We'll certainly convey that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bo Brendler.
Hi, this is Bo Brendler. about 4 years ago, a young man came up to me very agitated and upset at an ICANN meeting. Maybe it was a little longer than 4 years ago, and he was from the Red Cross. He was in their IT department, and he showed up at the ICANN meeting to try to find some way to get some assistance from the at-large because a number of the Red Cross sites had been hijacked in Africa and were being used for all manner of evil doings or whatever you want to call it. There was, at that point, no way to really help him. So, you know, we tried a bit to figure out what processes were open, and there was nothing. And the bottom line of that is, you know, now all of these years later, the Red Cross apparently took this issue so seriously that they've now been instrumental in creating NPOC and doing all of these sorts of things that distract them and cost money from doing good work. So what I want to say is I think that the at-large came down on the wrong side of this issue, and that to echo in the practical nature of what Jean-Jacques said, I believe that it should issue a statement of support that certain organizations that have merit in this way should be given special consideration, especially in light of what has now happened with the release of the new GTLD applications. I think it looks very bad for this organization for nonprofits to come away with the sense that they are being gamed into making purchases or possibly protecting trademarks. They should not have to be worrying about that.
Okay, thank you. Next is Salaneta.
Hi, Brian. Salaneta Tamani Kamara for the record. You can call me Sala.
Thanks.
First, a quick scenario. Imagine the International Criminal Court and someone applies for string and enforces and fraudulently dupes people to enforce warrants and that sort of thing, extracts information and data and that sort of thing, just from a public interest perspective. And so now I'm going to ask my question. Sorry. Okay. Imagine the International Criminal Court. Someone applies other than the International Criminal Court, fraudulently pretends, you know, anyway, applies for a string and fraudulently tries to serve warrants on unsuspecting consumers or unsuspecting individuals, citizens, whatever they may be. Okay, so the first question I have in relation tied to that is a question that was also raised by the GAC. Or perhaps I shouldn't go into that. Well, basically, in terms of the reservation of names, what would it mean from a policy perspective, from an ICANN policy perspective, in terms of ICANN reserving names of IGO names and acronyms, and what are the potential implications? The other thing also is in relation to the intellectual property international conventions, such as the Vienna and the NICE, and that sort of thing. Is there any legal analysis so far in relation to how this is going to be treated in terms of prioritization? Or would you take the approach, I had posed a similar question yesterday in another work group where we were told that a string is not a mark. So I'm very curious to see the legal analysis and whether it's going to be made public, if there's one already being done. I presume that there is legal analysis being done already because of certain assertions and positions that have been taken already. So from an at-large point of view, we would be very curious, and I would like to invoke the affirmation of commitments, particularly 9.1.2, in relation to accountability and transparency, to make that document public. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sala. There has been some legal analysis performed by the IOC and the Red Cross, in particular, to support their case or their position, if you will, to, you know, to provide permanent protection for their names. There has not been, and in fact, that's one of the issues that we've identified in the preliminary issue report, is that if indeed a PDP is initiated, one of the things to look at is to look at the legal arguments or analysis that has been provided by those two particular organizations, but also to conduct a legal analysis under what other types of international frameworks or treaties could be established to either, you know, support the case for protecting IGOs or not to protect them. You know, and as you point out, you know, certain jurisdictions do allow for to consider, you know, domain names to be trademark, while others do not, including the United States. So certainly if a PDP were to be issued, again, one of the suggestions or recommendations is that such type of legal analysis do be conducted, and of course, if so, it would be published in any sort of final report.
Thank you very much, Brian, and thank you for these extensive explanations. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and I see a lot more hands who wish to speak and ask questions. Would it be possible to submit them to you in writing or
sure.
to establish communication to follow up on this?
Establish maybe some sort of, you know, methodology for communication, we can respond to them.
Okay. So, well, okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'll point out we are having a session on this later this afternoon. Without Brian, perhaps, but there will be further discussion.
Okay, next in our lineup. Next in our lineup is Phyllis Yilmaz, Senior Director of Participation and Engagement. Hello, Phyllis.
Hello, all. Hello.
As usual, we are late, and I apologize.
That's
but
okay.
It's great that you can come and see us, and we do have, well, we have had a dialogue with you for a while, ever since the last meeting in Costa Rica, and so we're here to continue on that dialogue. Unfortunately, we haven't got very much time, but we'll try and see how it goes. We're on a compressed schedule, so the floor is over to you, Phyllis.
Thank you, Olivier. I don't have slides, and that will hopefully, you know, quicken things up a little. Just a quick... Yay, finally, right? So just a few updates on our regular stuff, so you get a heads up, as usual, what's going on, and you get a brief from me. I just want to talk to you about the newcomers' activities that we started recently based on the, you know, feedback coming from this group. It is getting very, very popular now. And we've been receiving really good feedback since San Francisco. That makes like five meetings, I think, or four meetings since we've been running it. And this meeting on Sunday, we had sessions again, and we had 80 people in the room, and about 10, 7 to 10, depending on throughout the day. Obviously, there are ins and outs from the remote participation. And is the lunch is also buzzing only on Sunday and Monday and a couple of hours from Saturday. So far, we had 141 visits. So it's really good. And from ICANN43, just to get a bit more feedback, and I understand there is also a lot that sometimes you give a service, but people are not aware that that service exists. So in the direction of PRing this effort, we had a little interview with the participants at ICANN43, and I passed the URL to Matt. If you have time, when you have time, you can have a look, or we can run it a bit at the beginning now. Would you like to see that? Yeah.
Are we going to have the equivalent of the artist?
It's all live. It's not going to be gold.
In full Technicolor. Fantastic.
No, it's a horrible idea. Let me see if I can get a...
I think we can just see that it's a fantastic video with lots of colors and beautiful people on there and very exciting. And I ask everyone in their own time, not now, pay attention, to watch it later on, I guess, when they have any spare time, which means probably in about 6 or 7 days' time. Anyway, back to you, Feliz.
All right, that, you know where the video is if you want to watch it later on at a spare time, probably in 2 weeks' time. Okay, all right. So the next thing is the remote participation services are still going on, and we have 112 sessions broadcasted from this meeting. Everything public goes out in the internet as well. And we have translations so far. I believe it's working well. And those are the highlights of this meeting. The other highlight I want to make you aware of, and I'm sure you're aware, but just to, you know, give another highlight from me, the public comment processes that you have been finding it difficult to provide your feedback, that was already, you know, mentioned before, but now in this... meeting, we, as usual, we will again have the public participation committee's consultation with the community. And in that session, we have only 2 agenda points this time. One is public comment processes. So we want to see, you know, show you some results, what happens in the last 5 months, you know, what is the status, what are the thoughts maybe to remedy the situation, interim fix. Together with long-term fix. I also want to talk about what a community actually expects from ICANN public comment processes, because that's another thing. I think that is a broader question where we need to also start some dialogue on. Is it a process that people or groups put some statement on for the board to review, or is it some kind of fora that community wants to discuss things in a more interactive way among each other as well? Or maybe it is both. But we need to, you know, find a medium way, because I think among the community, different parts of the community, there are different views in what ICANN public comment process should be doing. And this is part of the also the problem, or not so problem, but we need to clarify it so we can provide the better structure mapping out of that understanding. The other agenda point will be the language services in that session. So you might, I know you are very interested in that, about the policy. There is a public comment process about that. Christina is on your list to talk about this, I believe. I'll leave that to her, but that she will be part of that session too. So that is at 9 a.m. on Thursday. There will be the ATRT recommendations, which will be covering these 2 subjects as well, the session on ATRT recommendations. It's going to be the same, but, that has to be reported within that session as well, those 2 things. And there is an outreach session at 8 a.m. On Thursday, just before the PPC consultation session. So. Those are my updates, Olivia.
Fantastic, Phyllis. And I note it is 12:04, and you had until 12:05. So thanks for all this. Well, I think you just deserve a round of applause for all your work. Thanks. And now we're going to have a quick dancing chairs routine where... Oh, well, I think we have 1 minute for questions if you want. But I know that here questions go on for more than 1 minute, especially with Cheryl. Cheryl Langdonor, make it quick, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Cheryl Langdonor for the Transcript Powers, Record. Chair. I'm sorry?
If the chair took certain powers, it lasts as long as the chair allows.
Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go on, Cheryl, please.
Thank you, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, for the transcript record. It's not actually a question. It was a little bit of information that I wanted to share with Felice because, as you know, I served on the ATRT and the comment-reply comment came out of those recommendations. We, as an unofficial group, the alumni, those of us who were the ATRT, have had several meetings and discussions on this. We are aware of some opinion from Denise. We know that Denise will be talking to you, but we're also keen to see, and I suspect the community will be keen to see, what happens next. We recognise that it does need more than fine-tuning, but the ATRT itself is aware. Now, that said, it means that we're not going to get completion of those recommendations, so there's a little bit of time pressure on that as well. But just to say, we recognise the work that's being done and we look forward to early intervention on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Tijani and Jean-Jacques, and the queue will be closed after that.
It's a comment, it's not a question. You raised a very important point about the public comment. And I do think that there is something to do. And I think that we have to separate the public comment from the statements that we sent to the board. It will be better for us, less stress on us, and also our community can comment and we can send the statement. So it is double influence.
Thank you, Tijani. Jean-Jacques Soubrena.
Thanks. Quick comment. I think this is really a sign of where we are today. We have evolved. This is a comment both for staff and for the ALAC. Thanks to the gradual implementation and improvement of all these instruments for better participation, remote or otherwise, but also linguistic services, I have the feeling that now ALAC is in the forefront of ICANN for participation. I just wanted to make that remark in passing.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. And so thank you very much, Felice, for coming to speak to us. Joining us now, we have Christina Rodriguez from Language Services, and we also have David Clausen, Director of IT Services, joining us. So here we go. The name cards go flying. Christina, would you like to start? I'm not sure you have a presentation or
no,
just a quick update. Fantastic.
This is Christina Rodriguez from ICANN staff, for the record. Mostly, I think I'm here to answer some questions that you may have in order to be able to post or send a comment to the public comment period the Language Services has opened in regards to the document that was prepared, which is ICANN Language Services Policy and Procedures. However, let me let you know that on Thursday, you will be, if you like to, you could attend. There are two sessions where the subject will be discussed as well. And in one of them, there's going to be a pretty good sort of extensive presentation and 30 minutes to interact with questions and answers. And that will be in the ICANN Rich Community Working Session from 8 to 9. No, I'm sorry. My mistake. So sorry. That will be in the public participation committee and community consultation from 9 to 10:30. And also we'll discuss the same subject, but just for a bit, on the accountability and transparency reviews community consultation from 12 to 1:30. Other than that, I'm open to any questions that you may have regarding the document that was posted for public comment.
Thank you very much, Christina. We have a queue, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, and then Sergio. Sunny Esporto, and Yao Viatohon as well. And I think we'll close the queue after that because we have just very little time. So, Cheryl, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cheryl Langdon-Orr for the transcript record. Christina, I held the pen on the draft, which if Matt scrolls down, we are doing a little bit of adjustment because we do our own public comment for our own community. So yesterday we met. We had, I think, a very productive meeting. We had members of all the regions, including those regions which make most use of your services. There is some text adjustment that we will be doing before this goes to the ALAC. And we do expect the ALAC to probably have it passed on in the public comments in a timely manner. As you can imagine, it was a document that we've gone over very, very closely. And in the main, both from the regional work, and LAC RALO has done a specific regional response, which will be attached. It is standalone LAC RALO, but it will form part of what is put in our public comments, so that they can be read jointly and severally, because there are some divergent points. One of the things that I think is fairly uniform across is our general pleasure and thanks to all the work that we know and we've seen has gone on. There is some tweaking in some of what is proposed that we would like you to consider, and they will be in our comments. And in the main, I would predict you'll find them far more easy to live with than some of what we've discussed in the past. So it's things like a removal of specific languages and just talking about the UN languages. So it's getting less specific on some things, and for something like a policy, we think, making it a little bit more longevity and lifelike. If you have any particular clarifications or questions when this comment comes through to you, we do have a small ad hoc team. There's a whole bunch of people that can respond very quickly. So if you want to close that loop, this is so important to our community, as you know. And yet again, we are wanting to make sure that we have very clear definition and difference in policy. And we mean paragraphed apart, where we talk about interpretation and we talk about translation, because our needs are very, very different. And we certainly want to see strengthening in one of those areas, perhaps far more than the other. I think that's my review. And unless there's anything that I've missed and no one's waving at me, thanks, and it's in the mail.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. Next is Sergio Salinas Porto.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Thank you, Chair. For the records, this is Sergio Salinas Porto. I think that Cheryl has said quite a lot of what I was planning to express. I want to congratulate you once again, Christina. Every time we meet you, we commend your job. And also, I will slow down for the sake of our interpreters. And secondly, as Cheryl very well said, LAC RALO has published a statement that will be published together with ALAC's statement. Naturally, we emphasize some issues over others against ALAC's document. This is what we are going to post. There are some objections regarding automatic email translation. We are having some issues in our region, and that makes communication almost impossible, communication between English and Spanish speakers, and that has created some issues. So we need to see how we go about it. There is a proposal, I think, and I will accommodate my schedule to be there with you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina, and thank you very much, Sergio. I'm getting all the names wrong, and I see you're getting the days wrong. So, okay, next is Yaovi Atahun, and we'll have to move on.
Yaovi speaking. I would like to add my voice to people who already said congratulations to what you are doing. My concern is about the website, and I think it's very important for us at ICANN. There is a lot of progress, but there are a lot of information that need to be translated in other languages. Like the past, the people were talking about compliance, TLG acceptance. All these concepts, they have them in English on ICANN website. So my request is that if you can, try to make the ICANN website multilingual. All the static document, it will be good. When I click the same document in French, I have it in English, I have it in a low language. This is not the case for now. If you go to the website, you click on French, you see just some documents that are translated. But the structure of the website, we should have the same thing also in other languages. I know that is not easy. I know you are trying, but I just talking that you move fast. Thank you.
To be honest, unfortunately, the website is not the project of the website is not under my commission. If it was, you rest assured that it will actually be a mirror site of what the English website is. I believe that is the optimal way to do it, the best way to do it. My understanding is that what we will be working on in regards to the website is actually the most important stuff, or you know, the most relevant things will be provided. Right now, there is a lot of material translated, but I believe it's very hard to navigate on the website and find that it's not properly set. We are working on that to make it more accessible while we decide, you know, which way to go in regards to the overall website in the different languages. But we are definitely working on it by all means.
Thank you, Christina. And one more question I've noticed from Sandra Hoferista, so that it balances out all of our multilingual regions. Sandra?
Thank you, Olivier. It's Sandra Hofrichter for the transcript record. I just want to explain you a little bit the European view, because as Jovi mentioned, we agree that there's too little material translated or too hard to find. And I'm not talking about the six UN languages, but more languages than the six UN languages. This would be helpful for many of us to save time, to go through documents, to understand them, to have the right linguistic, the right words in their own language, and also to spread it to our community in the respective language. Given that the budget is not endless available, the European view is that, as it is settled down in the ICANN bylaws, the community language should be English. And for us, it would be a long-term aim to have less interpretation but more translation, because there are a lot of material accessible for ALS structures, but on an ICANN, on an ALAC level, English communication skills should be a key issue. We understand we cannot change the system from one day to another, but we see it as a long-term aim. Thank you very much.
I have to speak my mind, and I hope it comes across with all the respect. I believe we are reaching a point from Language Services and ICANN Language Services and all the efforts that we put into growing the Language Services Department. We're reaching a point where we are being able, starting from Toronto and on, to provide interpretation in all the five non-English UN languages. This was actually something that was... This was actually something that came to happen after listening and to the community and, you know, and trying to make everybody happy. And now it's hard to hear that you want less interpretation. To be honest with you, it's like you're never happy. You know, I have to speak my mind. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because it's four years of work for me, you know, to reach this point. I feel very accomplished and very happy because I know that we'll be reaching a great part of the community will be able to interact, speak in their own language, listen in their own language. But yet, you now say that less interpretation. It is, I have to say, very frustrating. Nevertheless, we need to actually somewhat, you know, restrain, or not restrain, but make sure that we can... set ourselves to something that we can deliver. So taking the UN as let's say, you know, an example sort of thing in regards to what languages reaches the most people or the most languages out in the world is what we are trying to follow. The UN is certainly, you know, an organization that works with the whole world, and the languages that they choose or they have in their agenda at all times are the same ones that we are going to provide for everybody. The interpretation that is being added from Toronto and on to every to all the ICANN meetings coming next after that one will be added on sessions or main sessions on Monday, Tuesday, all board sessions where they season SOs, and all the public sessions on Thursday and the closing as well, and all the GAC sessions as well. Hopefully, and slowly but surely, we'll be able to add those sessions to your sessions, maybe, you know. It's a lot of work, and it requires, and everybody needs to understand that it requires a space, physical space, because two booths takes that space. Five booths takes a much bigger space. And we are, as is, we are running out of space, you know, of places where it's big enough space for us to conduct ICANN meetings. So we need to carefully, you know, hold the growth and actually accompany the growth of what we're trying to accomplish and what we are trying to deliver for the better of the better of the community.
Thank you very much, Christina. I see a dozen hands going up in the room. I see a lot of smiles as well, so perhaps you should quit while you're ahead. it brings some positiveness into the whole, well, into our community, because obviously languages are very important, and we are very diverse and all speak like the Tower of Babel sometimes. But at ICANN, at least, we're able to express ourselves. Anyway, thanks very much. We're going to move quickly to the next person, and that's David Clausen, Director of IT Services. In fact, David was here when we spoke about the translation tools on the wiki and on the mailing lists, which don't work out that well, or which make it, well, a bit strange. Anyway, David, you're on.
David Clausen, IT Operations at ICANN. I'm in a bit of a hot seat here, I take it. So I only have 2 minutes, so I'm going to keep this brief and to the point. There was three main issues that were brought up with the existing tool, which I understand the translation content themselves itself is not so good. It is the best we can do at this time. And I'm referring to the Lacrallo English to Spanish, Spanish to English, back and forth. Many of you are probably on that list, or both lists. So the first issue regarding attachments not being translated or not even being carried through the translation process is an explicit design limitation of the tool we're using. It simply does not do that. Getting it to do that would be a significant development effort. And at this time, that wasn't put on the prioritization for the IT operations or the IT development, who I'm speaking on behalf of is the development department. The item number two was subject line translations from when going from Spanish to English and English to Spanish can become garbled. I was apprised that most email is encoded in US ASCII, and so in the event that a client is UTF-8 because it's international, it would convert it to and fro. Now, if messages are sent in pre-encoded, the actual subject line would be reversed correctly. But in some cases, there's odd things that the mail clients are doing, such as using ISO encoding in the subjects and various, or not, none at all, and just using whatever the default is of that system, which would be, it could vary. So that's something that we actually think we can fix. We feel that we can catch 80 to 90% of those by trying to figure out what encoding the mail client had actually sent and attempt to fix it. So that's something that we're going to work on this trimester, which would be between now and Toronto. And the last item, which is regarding the missing subject lines for the Lacrallo list, that is a simple code change that we feel that we can fix. It shouldn't be a problem at all to get done before Toronto.
Okay, thank you very much. We already have a queue in operation. First Evan, then Sergio, and then I believe Jean-Jacques. So Evan Ljubovic first.
Hi, this is Evan. As somebody who's had the circumstance of having to create quite a few pages on the Confluence site. I need to ask you about the way of setting permissions, of being able to set read write permissions. I've been driving Matt crazy with requests to be able to add participants merely for the ability to read pages. Having a situation in which the person that creates a page can't be in charge of its sharing permissions is really a problem. Is there a way to set that so that you don't have one master admin through which all permission changes have to change? If not, I'm really starting to see that as a deal breaker because a lot of wikis don't have that restriction, and I really need you to look into this whole issue of permissions. Having people that can't get into wiki pages that we make is now becoming a serious impediment to collaboration.
Thank you, Evan. I gather that's noted.
Noted.
Okay.
I could speak to that if you would like. Yeah. David Kloss in IT operations. That sounds like a configuration error on our side. It doesn't sound like a limitation of the wiki software itself. It sounds like something that could be remedied there. So I apologize for that inconvenience.
Thank you. So the queue is closed. Currently in the queue is Sergio, Jean-Jacques, and Tijani. I can see smiles. Sergio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Sergio Salinas Porta for the record. First, I would like to make the same comment as Evan regarding the issue of Confluence. I would also like to congratulate you for the fact that we have a translator inside Confluence allowing us to translate our messages instantly. This helps us a lot in our participation and in user participations when it comes to policy discussions within ICANN. And on the other hand, regarding the electronic means or tools, the problem might be it is not that when someone sends an email with an attachment, the attachment is not translated, although we would like to have the attachment translated. The problem is that sometimes we do not receive the attachment. That is the main problem. And on the other hand, the translation is almost unintelligible. We do not understand what we are reading, really. So this makes our work very difficult. Sometimes we rather go to the original document, copy the original document, and try to see word by word or use another translator machine so as to have a concrete idea of what the document is reading. The other problem that we have is that we are not receiving the emails or the emails do not get to the recipient. So we send an email. There is a group of people who do not receive that email and some others do. So this makes or creates delay in our response and processes. That are the main problems that we have. And I would like you to take note. And if you need help, please let me know. Thank you very much.
Thank you much. Thank you very much, Jose. Sergio, here we go. I'm getting all the names wrong again. It's the whole day like this. Sorry about this, Sergio. We are Tuesday, aren't we? Jean-Jacques.
Yes, Jean-Jacques speaking on Tuesday. David, thanks for that presentation. I have a question from a layman to a specialist, not directly about this, but it is somewhat linked. I think that the progress performed in ICANN overall for the ICANN meetings, such as this one, the improvements have been terrific. I still feel there is a problem when we convene as separate units. For instance, ALAC, we have an ALAC teleconference at least once a month, and there I feel that the tools we are using are not up to scratch. For instance, we can have voice, we can have text, but not image. So it's a question of broadband. So my quick question to you is, for the general user, which all of us are, what is the platform you would advise as being the most complete and the easiest to use? Is it Adobe Connect? Is it Skype? Is it what is it? Something else?
Well, I think you're talking about for the collaboration, obviously, but what you'd like to see is perhaps an integration, so you'd have something like Adobe Connect with integrated audio, So you didn't have to use two tools or maybe even three in some cases, right? Adobe does have integrated audio, and it could be used in some cases. It either can be used directly with telephony, or it can, you can use the built-in features, which are relatively new, actually, two-way audio, which before didn't work very well, but in the last year it's improved vastly, so it can actually be done directly from Adobe.
If I may, then, a follow-up question, not to you, Dave, but to our chair. Would you mind trying to get staff to organize such a thing as a trial, whenever you think that can be achieved? Because I think we really deserve a better tool. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. Yes, I think we will be. Let's do this as an action item. And I'll let Heidi work it out with staff. Okay, last question, Tijani Benjamin.
Okay, it's Tijani, about the same.
I think you should speak in French, actually. To
As you want, yes. Okay. Mon nom, c'est...
Hello, I am Tijani Benjamin. And I wanted to speak mostly about the same issue because I wanted to mention Adobe Connect, which is a tool which I find wonderful, and it has evolved very much. And we used to have simply a chat, and now the fact of raising one's hand and getting the floor is interesting. And actually, I don't care about video, but I would like to have more sound, because more sound channels, that is, because we have several languages, and for teleconferences, half the people have to use the telephone. And it would be wonderful if we could have more than one audio channel on Adobe Connect or by means of another tool. But I think Adobe Connect, or whatever tool it is, are essential to our teleconferences, because now we have audio, and some people could not hear at all because the telephone did not work at home, and now we can hear those people even better than if they were next to us. So it's a tool which I find wonderful, and we have to go on developing it, if possible.
Merci beaucoup, Tijani.
Thank you very much, Tijani.
So I'd like to thank Christina very much. And seeing the improvements, let's hope that we have even more improvements in the next ICANN meeting. Joining us next is Margie Milam, Senior Policy Counselor. We have the dancing chairs routing again. And Samantha Eisner as well. Let's take the names, it's all do it yourself here. Yes, don't lose your power supplies. We usually end up with a room full of power supplies by the end of the day. Welcome. And so, I look forward to hearing. I believe you have to speak about the RAA negotiations. Perfect. That's an interesting subject.
That's a topic I'm sure you're all interested in. Hi, I'm Margie. I know I've greeted you before. I always loved talking to you guys and answering all your questions. there's obviously a lot of interesting developments on the RAA. Sam Eisner is on the legal team, and she's on the negotiating team as well, so that's why I brought her to answer some of these questions, if you have any. I'm sure you will, I know. All right. Who has my presentation? Somebody?
Matt, that's a person here. With a fruit-based computer, he will... deal with your presentation.
Do you have it? Let me see. Sorry, just a second. Okay, well, I can begin talking while you find this. Okay, so just to refresh your memory on this project, basically two projects on parallel tracks that stem from the Dakar board resolution that basically... directed that negotiations begin on the RAA to try to pick up on the law enforcement recommendations that were submitted by certain law enforcement representatives, as well as recommendations from the the joint GNSO ALAC drafting team that that many of you were participating in and really did contribute a lot to the discussion. And as you may recall, that report had high priority and medium priority amendment topics, and those are topics that we've been considering in the negotiations themselves. So since Costa Rica, there's been a lot of activity. There's a community wiki that's been published that kind of gives you a lot of information on where we are in the negotiations. And there were, since Costa Rica, there's been actually updated amendment recommendations from the law enforcement community, specifically on who is validation and data retention. And so they provide clarification on their prior requests to help us understand what they were looking for as we go through the negotiations. And just prior to Prague, we published a series of documents that we thought would be helpful for the community to look at, and they're very detailed, but they give you a snapshot of where we are on the negotiations. The other part of the project is the issue report request, because the board anticipated that there may not be all of the amendment topics addressed in the negotiations and that the community may still want to explore some of these amendment topics. So they asked for an issue report that would be the first step in starting a PDP with the GNSO on amendment topics that perhaps don't get incorporated into the new RAA. And so that issue report was published and finalized, and it's basically on hold. The PDP is on hold at the moment because we're trying to identify, what the final RAA is going to look like and then what topics haven't been addressed. And once those remaining topics, as it's called, are identified, then there would be a PDP that could be started on those issues. So at the moment at the GNSO Council level, there's no activity on the PDP because we still don't know yet what topics should be explored. Okay, so on the next slide, mentioned the documents that were published. What I want to clarify is that the documents that were published are just a draft, and it's not a negotiated or agreed document. And so, if many of you attended the session on the RAA on Monday, you heard the registrar, view on some of these documents, and they've also published documents separately, which identify their areas of disagreement with some of the documents that have been published. But we thought it was useful to provide this draft RAA, which is the entire agreement, redlined or with entire changes, so that you can see, what we're talking about, and also you can appreciate the complexity of the issues that we're dealing with. It's really, as being a part of the negotiating team, we've had, 18 plus meetings. Some of them are full day meetings, telephone conferences for hours and hours. I mean, these are issues that we've explored in depth with the registrar negotiating team to try to get, to a workable solution on the RAA. And so on this slide, I've identified some of the key amendment topics that are addressed and are being addressed, including, obviously, the big ones, verification and validation of who is information and registrant data. A lot of additional information on collection of information related to registrants, obligations related to resellers, and proxy and privacy accreditation is now something that is being explored. And then a lot of the law enforcement ones related to abuse point of contact, which was a key law enforcement request. We've made a lot of progress in that regard because there's trying to make it easier of communication channel between registrars and law enforcement when it comes to these kinds of requests. And then also some of these other ones that related to things that were recommended by the drafting team, such as a prohibition of cyber squatting on the part of registrars and their affiliates. So this is, these are all big topics that are, show you that the agreement is really being enhanced in many ways to address these community concerns. And then on the next slide, the ICANN documents posted for Prague. This is what I was referring to earlier, you know, there's about maybe 70 pages of information here that try to give you a snapshot of where we are in the negotiations, you know, referencing back, for example, the law enforcement recommendations and where they are. And then there's also a lot of specifications and addendums that will be attached to the RAA, kind of taking the approach similar to what's in the registry agreements for new GTLDs, where there's an appendix, you know, that deals with certain, you know, specifications such as who is SLA, and in additional information that registrars would need to be providing to ICANN related to their officers and directors and affiliate structures and whether or not they offer a privacy service. So there's a lot more information that ICANN is seeking, and that's referenced in some of the specifications that you see published in the documents. Next slide, please. And then, as I mentioned, just right at the start of the Prague meeting, we did get receive documents from the registrar stakeholder group where they provide basically a scorecard and highlight some of the issues that are still of concern to them. And so you can really see the registrar point of view if you review these documents that they published. They're fairly detailed as well. And so, you know, again, I just want to emphasize that these negotiations are really going in depth on these issues to try to come up with a workable solution that, you know, can be agreed to by the parties. And so, as I mentioned, there, you know, there was a session on Monday where we were seeking community consultation. And this is an area, you know, we would like to hear from ALAC as well. You know, what is the ALAC view on some of these questions? I know you all are really good about writing statements and, you know, your position papers. We always appreciate the work that you all do because you add so much to the policy discussions and you're one of the only groups that does it consistently, and so we very much appreciate it on the policy side. But these are the areas where we've, you know, really struggled to try to find, you know, the compromise position, and to the extent that you have, in, you know, your positions on how to, you know, what you think would be appropriate for some of these issues. We did talk about them in depth on the Monday session. You know, we certainly welcome your input. You know, I just provided a link on the slide to where you can find those questions. But this, you know, these are things that relate to, you know, when verification should occur, whether it should occur before resolution or after resolution. Should, you know, phone verification be required? You know, if there is verification, is annually too much? You know, these are the sorts of questions. And if you read the information, you can see what we'd like to, you know, get input from you all to try to help inform the conclusion of the negotiations. Next slide, please. And so the next steps, you know, as I mentioned, we're doing consultations. At the GNSO Council meeting, there's also going to be some time allocated for stakeholder groups and constituencies to provide any further information if they'd like on the topic of the RAA. You know, Alan can certainly, you know, make statements during the GNSO Council meeting if there's anything that ALAC would like to, you know, would like the council to hear about, the negotiations are going to continue. And I think with that, then the last slide is just where you can get information on all of this, the status, where the wiki's located, the final issue report that I mentioned earlier, and then, you know, the information for the Prague session. There's a recording there and a transcript if you missed the session on Monday. And with that, I think we'll open up for questions.
Thank you very much, Margie. I see two questions already, one from Cheryl and one from Bo. So Cheryl Langdonor, please to everyone, we are running out of time, so please keep them short. Yep. And also, Margie, please keep the answers short. And Evan. Okay. Cheryl.
Go. Right. Thank you, Cheryl Langdonor from the Transcript Record. Matt, if you could roll back to slide 7, please. I wasn't there on Monday, and I apologise if what I'm going to say was brought up and you're about to yawn, and that's okay. With these questions, and I also say I have skimmed some of the material, I have not read it in depth. I actually fell asleep on the plane. Oops, sorry. Happy with that list, but the one that gives me pause and the one that may be the most difficult to get consensus out of this group is data retention. And I'd go a little bit further than data retention, the type of data that
law enforcement are asking to be collected and maintained. Certainly, I must say, and I'll declare an interest, was involved in the national privacy principles developed in my country. They need reviewing. It's a hot topic in many places and spaces. It is different in many places and spaces. But also, there are mechanisms of payment which are used quite reasonably to deliberately obscure the credit card details and payment details of people. And that's a right that I would think many of us would want to fight for quite vehemently. So looking down the list, my feeling is that's the one that, interestingly enough, we might have a lot more to talk about. And I think this would be a good forum, perhaps in Toronto again, to come back and focus on some of those specific ones. Hope I wasn't too long, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheryl, do you wish to have a brief answer?
So we agree. We think that the data retention portion has a lot of potential hotbeds in it. And so, you know, we want to be clear that the draft that was put up is an ICANN proposal, but it's not necessarily ICANN's position. What we were doing, you're right, exactly a straw man, because we were provided with proposals from law enforcement. So what we attempted to do was put that into contractual language to see what it would look like, but then put it out, because that's what a baseline for conversation can be. And so we don't want to express a position that ICANN is advocating for all of this data, right? We want to have the discussion happen. And so we are in conversation with data protection authorities. We're having some discussions today to figure out how we can continue to bring data protection authorities to the table. And data protection authorities have actually been involved in the conversation to date, but we haven't gotten people from all the jurisdictions that we need. And we haven't had their focus on it until this went out, right? And so this conversation will continue with a focus on exactly what you said.
Thank you. And for the transcript, this was Samantha Eisner answering. Next is Bo Brandler.
Hi, it's Bo Brandler. Could you go back maybe to the slide number 3, I think? Go forward 1, current status. Yeah, down towards the bottom, the penultimate item there, it says enhanced compliance-related obligations. I was wondering if you could just briefly elaborate on the details of what that is, because I haven't heard about it.
This is Samantha Eisner, for the record. Without having the reams of paper that we produce for this directly in front of me, I can give you a little bit of a highlight of what those are. One of the items that we have proposed in there is a requirement for registrar self-assessment. I know in your conversations with Maggie, one of the really effective tools is getting some preventative measures in. So helping registrars give them metrics about what they would actually look at and then report to us on. So it's not always waiting for complaint-based systems. We're not always being reactionary. And so that type of registrar self-assessment is in there. We've also increased the termination provisions and our ability to terminate, but also inserted a bit more substance around the suspension clause to use it as a useful tool to bring registrars into compliance, because you know it's not always the case that you need to just stop, terminate a registrar, you know, deal with all the change of domain names and everything. If we can really work through and get a registrar back into compliance through suspension tools and continue monitoring them, we would do that. We don't have a lot of teeth to do that now. And so we're trying to figure out how to make it more effective. Those are some examples. I think there are a couple more, but it's not on the top of my head right now.
Thank you very much. Next is from Evan Nibovich. Next question.
Sorry, hi. I guess you're getting tired of us. This is, what, the third time this week so far.
I actually wanted to follow up on a little bit from, you were both at the board, our meeting with the board, or you were, Sam, you weren't. Okay. And part of this had to do with, I want to follow up with something that Jean-Jacques brought up at the meeting that we had with the board, and that was even about the use of the term negotiation. And just so, at least from what, at least from my feeling of what we've had in our meetings with NALAC and so on, is that there's a concern that thus not be a situation where there must be something that's mutually agreeable with the registrars, or if there's an impasse, it can't happen. This is a regulatory environment. You are asserting the public interest on our behalf in dealing with the registrars. And so both on issues of regulatory policy and in issues of accountability and transparency and making things open, there's even an issue with calling this a negotiation, that this is something that you're dealing with them and maybe there's some middle ground in the middle. There may be some kind, there's some times where the public interest needs to be asserted in a way, and if the registrars don't like it, the registrars don't like it. This is a regulatory environment. And so have there been situations where there's been an impasse and you just have to go ahead and say, this is what we're going to do? That's at a general level. At a specific level, and I'll reiterate again, 378 has been a sticking point with us, which is sort of the or else clause. Is if everything doesn't work and things are in breach, what's the or else? And when we had the meeting with Maggie on Sunday, and we started hearing terms of, well, if things are in breach and things are problems, then things get become candidates for termination as opposed to things get terminated. And there's these sort of gaps and things like this that almost enable things to fall through the cracks. And I'm wondering if you could sort of elaborate. Garth has put forward 9 very specific cases of instances that have gone into dead ends. And this is a concern even with the existing regime, and as we're coming into GTLD expansion by many fold, you know, there's got to be a certain level of confidence that, you know, if things are falling through the cracks right now, even with the small number of TLDs that we have, you know, there's a concern about that, especially when it comes time to scale it. And so this is why this part is critical. And in fact, if you're interested, we even have some proposed wording for 278 that would strengthen the existing wording that you have in there that I think would help address some of our most serious concerns. Thanks.
So, Samantha Eisner again, for the record. There are multiple points laid out, Evan, but I'll respond to 2 and hopefully, you know, cover the rest of it. In terms of candidates for termination and not immediately proceeding to termination, et cetera. And this doesn't necessarily have to deal with REA negotiations themselves, but I think for the general compliance conversation that we're having, right? Because one of the goals of updating the REA is to achieve a better tool for compliance, exactly. Right? And so I think that it might be helpful to really chart out the life cycle of compliance, because it's important to realize that when a breach occurs, termination does not occur immediately. That is not the right under the contract. And so understanding what happens between the points, you see the flow charts, right? But understanding what happens between those points and giving a little bit more process might actually be helpful for future conversations. So I think that I'll talk to Maggie about how we can bring that to you later, because I think it would give us all tools to discuss this a little bit more on some of the parts where we're hitting. I cannot let the statement that ICANN is a regulatory body go unaddressed. We are a private company. We do not have regulatory authority. Our authority to take action is based on the contracts that we have. We understand the import of the RAA to the internet community. We understand the import of what happens through it. We are not regulators. And I'm not sure how to address the concept of negotiation, because that's what you do when you have to negotiate a contract. It doesn't mean that we don't take in inputs from other people to assist in it. And there will be a point where contractual terms will be put up for public comment, and we invite your input into there.
Thank you very much, Sam. And I think we are opening a brand new discussion here from what you've just told us. And we'll have it as an action item to discuss this in Toronto. But I have Jean-Jacques Sebrenat, who absolutely insists to follow up on this. We need very short statements, please. Yes. Bearing in mind, we will be addressing this in Toronto, because this certainly is a statement.
No, this immediate statement in direction of Sam is this. You see, your use, constant use of the word negotiation is misleading to those who are not involved in the process. So, as I requested already in other fora this morning, I would suggest that you go back to something more neutral, which would be the accreditation process. Think about it. I don't require an answer now, but I would suggest that you suggest to the leaders of the organization something like that, which would not antagonize one party or the other. Thanks.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. Carlton and close.
Well, let's put it on the record. It's good to hear that said straight out. We are not a regulator, and so we can begin the discussion. And the first thing I would want to know is, if you do not believe that you are regulating the DNS environment, what exactly do you think you do? That will help. That would help me certainly fix my head as to how I answer that question. And it's good, Sam. I'm really very pleased to hear that say outright from a council in the ICANN Council's office. We are not a regulatory environment. So here's an environment. You're supposed to be doing some things in the public interest. You're supposed to be the person there taking directions, running the lights, making the trains run on time. How do you get to that stage if you're not doing any kind of regulation? Thanks.
Thank you, Carlton. And I think we will bring this debate to a close, certainly with one action item to continue this in Toronto. And that will probably take us the most of several hours. But on top of that, there is a second action item which I'd like to have read to the record. And Sylvia Vivenko, could you please read this?
Yes, action item is to invite Margie Millan to talk about the issue of data retention in the ICANN Toronto meeting.
Okay, so Margie, Samantha, thank you very much for joining us. And it sounds like an au revoir, because we'll see you again in Toronto. Et à bientôt. And with this, before we bring this to a close, we have Kathy Kleiman, who is going to join us briefly. And I'm really sorry to have made her wait for so long, but obviously we had tons of things to discuss, and of course we started a little bit late. Kathy? Welcome, Kathy. It's absolutely fine.
My 10th anniversary button just fell off.
So rule number one, use a microphone.
And rule number two, don't break it.
I don't know if I can promise that.
It doesn't work.
Can everybody hear me? Great, thank you. I'm Kathy Kleiman, and I'm so pleased to be with you today. Thank you. And I'm going to try to talk slowly, which is not my forte. I'm an ICANN old-timer, but I'm newly back with my old law firm of Fletcher, Hild & Hildreth, which is in Arlington, Virginia, just over the river from Washington, D.C. It's the oldest telecommunications law firm in the United States. And I'm here to share with you a special project I'm working on with Google, and I couldn't imagine not coming to tell you about it. I'll take about 5 minutes. But first, I wanted to congratulate you on your 10th anniversary. It's a wonderful milestone, and ALEC has made an enormous contribution to ICANN. So I've come to congratulate you and also to thank you for what you've done. and wish you luck in the great debates ahead. So as you probably know, there's a vibrant discussion and debate going on over the future of internet governance. Countries are talking about whether and how much the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, should govern the internet. But many of us think the internet is well run through our multi-stakeholder models, including ICANN and the IETF. So a few weeks ago, I was doing the Washington thing. I was listening to discussions about the ITU versus the multi-stakeholder model in Washington. I was at hearings in Congress. I was at lunches. I was at numerous conferences. And it occurred to me that the discussion was too high level. We were talking about the ITU. We were talking about multi-stakeholder models. But no one who was talking really knew anything about what we did, what we do here at ICANN. And I thought, if I were someone who was listening to this debate, I wouldn't understand it because there weren't any details. And I wrote to Vint. I wrote to Vint Cerf, father of the internet, and I said, Vint, what about, I said, the meeting of ICANN is coming up in Prague in a few weeks. What if we tried to capture people telling some of their own stories about what they do at ICANN, why they participate, what's exciting. People from, you know, we know people from different countries, people from different stakeholder groups and advisory committees. I said, let's see, why don't we bring a videographer and see if we can capture some of this. And what you probably don't know is in a different life, in a different hat, I'm actually a documentary producer too. So this is kind of joining two parts of my life, which is fascinating. And so Vint said yes, and he introduced me to Patrick Ryan at Google. And Patrick's wandering the hallways, but he introduced me to Patrick Ryan at Google, and we're working together. And tomorrow, for 12 hours, we have a videographer here in Prague. We'll be in the Dublin room, and we're going to be doing exactly what we talked about, capturing stories and capturing all, you know, us telling our stories and why we're passionate. Short stories, 3 to 10 minutes, pick your language. And we would love to include you. And again, I couldn't imagine not coming to invite you personally. Just to let you know, it is a limited number of slots, so we're planning to continue the project via webcams and other ways of collecting stories. So we have a limited number of slots left, a few for every group that we're coming to today. But again, it's the larger project I also wanted to introduce you to, and we're going to keep going. And this will be uploaded, of course, to YouTube and available for everyone.
Thank you very much, Kathy. A few comments. Alejandro Pisanti,
it would be very useful for you to and everybody participating to make reference to the project run by Jana Quitt Anderson from Elon University under the title Imagining the Internet. That's really easy to find online. They have been doing this for several years in mostly around the IGF. And there's an immense repository of valuable video with all the main participants and key messages. It has been supported by journalism students. So the documentation is of a very, very high quality, and it would certainly provide a very useful framework for what you're doing.
Thank you very much, Alejandro. And certainly I've seen Elon University interview Vint, and certainly great video archive. Any other comments or questions? Kathy, when you mentioned the 3 to 10 minute mark, judging from how late we are, I think you'll probably have the 10 to 15 or more. We'll probably have to cut people up because the 3 minute, well, I've never seen anyone here speak for only 3 minutes. And myself included. Anyway, I think it's the end of this session. Thank you very much to all of you for attending. Thanks very much, of course, to the interpreters for bearing with the... We think that equating being short means speaking fast, but in fact, no, it's being concise about things. And sometimes I think we have to think a little bit more before we open our mouths, myself included, of course. And of course, thanks to the sound people and the technical staff for having brought this meeting to work. And of course, thank you to our amazing staff here. This meeting is now closed.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is, in fact, a...